presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the story The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
Have you ever tried looking for a needle in a haystack? Well, I did a bit of needle searching in London myself not so long ago, only this was no ordinary needle, as it all concerned a picture a man had painted in Holland 300 years ago. I'll call this little adventure The Elusive Vermeer.
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the Third Man, in today's story, The Elusive Vermeer.
I first met Horace St. John Windermere. Oh, yes, that really was his name, at Cannes. Horace had class. He's probably the classiest breaking and entering merchant that has ever burgled an English country mansion. And he had taste, too. Horace's jars were all big ones. He planned them months in advance, down to the last detail. That's how I came to get involved. We were having a drink at his villa one evening, just the two of us.
Hey, my dear fellow, I've been wondering if I could interest you in a small business proposition.
So long as it involves a maximum of profit with a minimum of risk, the answer is yes.
Well, it'll be profitable enough, I assure you. As for the risk, well, that's up to yourself.
I'm all ears.
With a certain reluctance, I confess, I should be returning to England next week. As soon as the right opportunity presents itself, I propose to visit a place called Bardsley Hall, Wilts.
Wilts?
Oh, Wiltshire, my dear fellow, the county. Bardsley Hall is one of the showplaces there on the country seat of Lord Brixton.
This visit will be during his lordship's absence, of course.
Well, naturally. It would be most embarrassing if we were to meet.
Yes,
he has
so.
All Hepplewhite and Adam pieces that I find quite irresistible. Not to mention a modest collection of Chelsea and Beau Porcelain, some fine examples of Waterford glass, and, this is where you come in, Harry.
No?
An extraordinarily fine painting by the 17th century Dutch master, Vermeer van Delft. No doubt you're on familiar terms with Vermeer's Lady of the Virginals in our National Gallery.
Oh, I've been on familiar terms with many ladies, but I can't say I remember her in particular. However, carry on, old man. Don't let me stop the fine flow of your eloquence.
Well, I need hardly tell you that the disposal of the objet that come into my possession presents almost as many problems as the requisition and needs to be as carefully planned.
Yes, I guess that's so, well.
Fortunately, the Hepplewhite and Adam, the Chelsea and Beau, and Waterford present no great difficulties. My clientele includes a number of gentlemen who are always eager to add to their collections at a reasonable price. However, the Vermeer is, as one might say, a rather different kettle of fish.
Well, how's that?
Well, for one thing, it's rather too easily recognizable for an English collector to dare hang without risking the danger of having to answer awkward questions.
Oh.
And for another, the present-day price of a Vermeer is, I'm afraid, rather beyond the purse of most of my impoverished fellow countrymen.
Oh, I see.
It occurs to me, Harry, that with a little preliminary organization, you might possibly be able to find a market for it in America.
Well, I do have a few connections back home.
Precisely. So, if you're interested...
Tell me, old man, what would be a fair price for a Vermeer?
In your currency, $100,000?
Oh, that's real money. And my cut of this $100,000, the old man?
Well, the normal agent's fee in transactions involving rare works of art varies from 20% to 33%.
In that case, I'll settle for 50.
I had proposed to suggest 40.
I shouldn't if I were you, old man. Of course, you really want me in on this deal.
Very well, 50 it is. You'll start things moving from your end at once.
Sure, and you?
Oh, I shall, as I say, forego the pleasures of this idyllic spot and return to London next week. I shall make the requisite inquiries regarding his lordship's movements, and when the appropriate moment arrives, you will receive a wire from me saying simply, Roger.
Roger. And then?
Well, as soon as possible, you will go to Nice and catch the first available plane for London. By the time you arrive, the Vermeer will be in my possession. You will collect it at this address. I'll write it down for you, shall I?
Yeah. By all means.
There you are.
12A, Allgate Grove, EC3. That'd be somewhere in the East End, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Not the most salubrious neighborhood, I must admit, but one that I find extremely convenient at times.
Selling old masters is not exactly, as the English would say, my cup of tea. But they don't call me Harry Resourceful Lyme for nothing. And as it turned out, I didn't even have to contact my American connections at all. A couple of days after Horace left for England, I got talking to a guy named Joseph J. Hoffman, who turned out to be an oil millionaire from Omaha and who was traveling to give himself a bit of culture. All I had to do was mention the name of Vermeer, and nature did the rest.
Do I understand you to say, Mrs. Lyme, that you've got a real, genuine, dyed-in-the-wool Vermeer for sale?
Well, I haven't quite got it yet, but...
But you can get it?
I think so, yes.
Right, name your price.
Well, they don't come cheap, you know, $100,000...
And what?
Well, $150,000.
Sold? When can I take delivery?
Well, not so fast, Mr. Huffman. You're not buying a pair of socks in a 5- and 10-cent store, you know.
Oh, I don't quite get you.
Well, we've agreed on a price, certainly, but this may take a lot of delicate negotiation. You realize, of course, there are certain unusual features about it.
How do you mean?
Well, for instance, the picture's likely to be, shall we say, a trifle warm.
I don't care if it's white hot. My partner, Junius H. Oppenheimer Jr., got himself a Rembrandt last time he was over here, and my wife's millions have been green with envy ever since. So you get me that Vermeer, Mr. Lyme, and I'll pay the price you name and ask no questions.
Right, so long as you know exactly where we stand. I'm expecting word from my colleague in England any day now, and as soon as the okay comes through, I'll be flying to London. I suggest you follow immediately, and when I have the picture, I'll deliver it to you. We'll close the deal. Fair enough?
Sure. That's okay by me.
A few evenings later, Horace's wire came through. Roger. I passed the word on to Joseph J., and the following night I was in London. I decided I wouldn't mention the extra $50,000 to Horace. After all, what you don't know you're entitled to, you never miss. I booked in at the Ritz-Aston. After dinner, I made my way out to the East End. Allgate Grove is a sinister little side street in the heart of a slum, and 12A wasn't exactly what you'd call a palace. However, I knocked, and after a while, the door opened a few inches, and a little cockney guy stuck his nose out.
Yeah? What you want, chum?
Well, I'm looking for a Mr. Windermere.
An egg here.
Well, he told me to come to this address.
Oh, he did he? What's your name?
Harry Lyme.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so at first? Come right in, Mr. Lyme.
Thanks. You must be Jerry, aren't you?
Person. Well, we're getting to a parlor, shall we?
All right.
Nothing fancy, but we can have a bit of natter there and private as much.
Lead the way, old man. Lead the way.
Get to this door.
All right.
Make yourself at home, Mr. Lyme. Sit down and rest your plate of meat.
Thanks. When will I be able to see Mr. Windermere?
You mean to say you ain't heard about him yet?
I know. Is something the matter?
Something's the matter, all right. He's gone and right about snuffed it.
Snuffed it?
Turn up his toes. Kick the person back.
You mean he's dead?
Well, ain't that what I'm trying to tell you?
But how did it happen?
Oh, it was the old butcher's block.
What?
Always been a bit dicky, you know. Just suddenly gave up.
Butcher's block?
Clock. Ticker.
Oh, you mean he had a heart attack?
Couldn't put him much plainer, could I?
So what did this happen? Well, yesterday I had a telegram from him.
Well, that's when it happened. Yesterday. Oh. Last night, to be exact. It was all sort of a sudden, as you might say. See, Mr. Windermere and me had gone off for a bit of a run in the country.
Sir Bardsley Hall,
yeah,
Wilson.
Yeah, well, we picked up a few odds and ends there, see? A few bits of old furniture and
so
on and so on and pretty junky stuff.
Was there a picture among the things that you picked up?
Yeah, a big one and a gold frame.
Oh.
As the hills it looked. Some lovely fancy dress sitting in a room with a big map on the wall and one of them round globe things.
Was
I don't think I'd have done the bother with it, honest, I can't. Anyway, we was coming home, see?
With the stuff, yeah,
in the...
With
the stuff in the back of the van. Well, off we go with Mr. Windermere cracking jokes and chatting away 90 to the dozen and me only listening with half an ear, as you might say. Then all of a sudden I realised he ain't talking no more. I'll take a quick butcher's.
Butcher's?
Butcher's, look and look. Don't you understand English? Well, I'll take a look and... There he is, all huddled up in the Johnny Horner, in the corner.
Oh, yes, I see.
Well, I stopped the van to see what's wrong. He's just dead as a ruddy door there.
Poor old Horace.
Yeah.
Now,
he was took away first thing this morning by the undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's to be buried tomorrow. Oh, it's going to be a real slap-up funeral, I can tell you.
That's
nothing the best for the governor, that's what I'm saying.
All right, Sanibus, do you credit. By the way, what happened to the picture?
Picture?
Yes.
Oh, you mean a picture.
Yes, the picture.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, I was a bit worried about that.
So was I, as a matter of fact.
Well, what with all them rogers snooping around and so on, it might have been a bit dangerous, so I thought I'd better get rid of it too sweet.
You don't need to... Jerry, you didn't destroy it.
Well, I was going to, and then I thought I could probably flog it for half a quid. Well, half a quid's half a quid these odd times with super tax and all, so I took it to a bloke named Angus McFarlane, what has a junk shop down the street. Hey, Bob, that's all he'd give me.
You mean you sold it?
Yeah. Hey, flipping money, Bob.
Well, where does this Mr. McFarlane have his shop?
Oh, Turnpike Road, just up the high street.
Well, is he likely to be on the premises now?
Oh,
or
it's just a lock-up shop. I don't know where he lives. Why, what's the trouble?
Well, I just thought I might buy it back if he still has it.
Well, I could think of a lot of better things myself, but well, if it's the picture you want, I'll find it at Angus McFarlane's.
Okay, Jim. But Jerry, it seems, had underestimated the business acumen of Mr. McFarlane. I was at his shop bright early next morning, but when I mentioned the picture, he shook his head.
Aye, sir. I mean the picture you mean, Oddie. It's no longer here, the new.
Who did you sell it to?
A dealer from somewhere in Fulham. He was seeking for old frames, he said. And he bought all I had in the shop.
Well, what was his name?
Oh, I didn't ken that. He paid me cash, so I didn't ask.
Do you know whereabouts in Fulham he has his shop?
I didn't ken that neither.
Well, can you tell me anything about him at all that might help me to find him?
Oh, I mean, he had an accent. Aye, he had an accent, all right. But as to whether it was a Welsh or what it was, I no like to commit myself. I'm afeard I've forgotten.
Would this £5 note help you to remember, Mr. McFarlane?
It'd be a great help.
All right, let's start remembering.
Well, as I recall the man, he was tall and thin and clean-shaved.
Well, go on. What about his accent?
Accent? Wasn't something about an accent?
Okay. Here's another £5. Now, give, Mr. McFarlane, give.
Ah, why, of course. I recall the news. He was Irish.
Is that straight?
Would you doubt the word of a McFarlane, sir? I'm telling you, he was Irish as Paddy's pigs.
It was too late to do anything more that evening, so I went back to my hotel and spent the rest of the night cursing the perfidy of Mr. Angus McFarlane. Next morning, a waiter brought up my breakfast. As I was coping with toast and English marmalade, I switched on the bedside radio. It was right in the middle of the morning news session.
Prices will be increased by 1/4 ounce per person per week. The police last night recovered from premises in Reading a quantity of antique furniture, porcelain and glass, which had disappeared 2 nights previously from Bardsley Hall, Wiltshire, during the absence of the owner, Lord Brexton. A man has been detained. It is understood that a valuable painting by the Dutch master, Jan Vermeer van Delft, is still missing. And the police...
Well, I didn't need anyone to tell me what that meant. I had to find that picture and find it fast. Or else I might as well say a fond goodbye to Joseph J. Hoffman and his beautiful $150,000.
In a moment, Orson Welles returns as Harry Lime, the third man. Orson Welles, as Harry Lime, the third man, continues today's story, The Elusive Vermeer.
For half a day, I combed the main streets and back alleys of Fulham. By noon, I figured there couldn't possibly be another junk shop within 2 miles that I hadn't already been into. Then suddenly, in a dirty little side street, I found myself outside a dirty little shop, compared with which Mr. McFarlane's dump looked like something out of Bond Street. What excited me was half a dozen soot-covered old pictures in the window. I pushed open the door and entered.
At the top of the morning to you, sir.
He was tall and thin and clean-shaven, and there was no mistaking that accent. Do you happen to be the gentleman who bought a number of old pictures from a dealer in Aldgate a day or so ago?
Sure, that's me. From old Angus McFarlane, you mean?
That's right. And you know Mr. McFarlane?
Yes, we've known each other these last 15 years. Was it Patrick Bryan himself, that's me, sir, that had the next door to him, the old Caledonian market?
Skip it, thank heaven I found you, Mr. Byrne. I'm trying to trace one of those pictures. It was sold to McFarlane by mistake.
You mean to say it's a valuable picture?
Well, not intrinsically so, but it belonged to my grandmother, and so for me, at any rate, it has a strong sentimental value, if you know what I mean.
I understand perfectly.
So if you still have it, I'll be glad to buy it back at a fair profit to yourself, of course.
There's an idea I've already sold one or two, but let's hope it's still here. Come this way, sir. This is the lot I was asked to buy from McFarlane, the robber. Here they are.
There were 15 or 20 pictures, most of them corneal reproductions like the Monarch of the Glen, Psyche at the Well, and Carter's Saturday Night. What originals there were looked to me even cornier still. I went through the lot three times, but there was nothing remotely like a Vermeer.
You're sure you aren't right here, sir?
Oh, that's quite sure. We searched the joint from floor to ceiling. He was right, of course. Simply wasn't there. You say you've sold one or two pictures.
Yeah, that's right, sir.
Well, who to? Do you know the names of the buyers?
Well, he was a gent come in and bought one of them, sir. An arty sort of a gent with sanders and a big black beard. He was looking for a frame for one of his old masterpieces, he said. And then there was Mrs. Huggett.
Mrs. Huggett?
Yeah, that's right. Lives over the river at Putney. She's after buying a couple of pictures as presents for a married daughter, sir.
Could this one I'm after possibly have been one of them?
Sure, I don't know why not, sir. There was what I recall of some Highland cattle. Ugly beasts they were, too, but a fine picture. Would that be it, sir?
No.
And the other, let me think. Oh, sure, of course, I remember the other one was a fellow in an old-fashioned dress, standing in a room.
With a map on the wall?
Is that right? There was a map.
And a globe? You know, a globe of the world?
Sure, there was a globe, too, on it, sir. I remember it well. Is that the picture that one?
I believe so. Yes, I believe so. Whereabouts in Putney does this Mrs. Huggett live?
Where's Sir Putney? I'm afraid I can't tell you.
You don't know?
No, sir, except it's somewhere up by the top of the hill, I believe.
Okay, that's something to go on anyway. Thank you, Mr. Byrne. This is for your trouble.
Oh, thank you, sir. No trouble at all, sir. Thank you indeed.
Mrs. Huggett, Putney Hill. The scent was getting warmer. I hurried back to the main street looking for a cab to take me to Putney Bridge, and then, as I rounded a corner, I bumped into a man, a big, solid, very English-looking man.
Why, hello, Mr. Lyme. Fancy bumping into you in Fulham, of all places.
Hello.
You don't remember me?
I can't recall your face offhand, but your feet are familiar.
I see what you mean. Yours would be flat, too, if you pounded a beat for 10 years.
Oh, of course. I remember now. Yes, Inspector Dane.
That's right.
Nice to have met you again, Inspector James. So long.
What's the hurry, Mr. Lyme?
I have a little business to attend to, Inspector James. I'm just...
But we meet so rarely. In fact, I didn't even know you were back in England till yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yes. I happened to notice you once or twice. You appeared to be doing a round at the junk shop.
Oh, yes. Well, you see, as a matter of fact...
Tell me you're on the trail of the missing Vermeer, Mr. Lyme.
The missing Vermeer?
Haven't you heard about it? It was stolen from Lord Grexton.
Oh, no, I can't say I have. As a matter of fact, I've been trying to match an old Georgian decanter to make a pair for a friend of mine back home in the States.
Any luck?
No, not so far.
I'm afraid things like that aren't as easy to come by these days. The antique market isn't what it was. It's all these rich Americans, you know. Sorry, no personal reflection.
You couldn't have met me when you said rich.
Anyway, Mr. Lyme, if you intend continuing with your search, you might at the same time keep an eye open for this Vermeer. Our information is that it's found its way into a junk shop somewhere in this area.
Oh, well, I'll certainly look for it, of course, but I'm no authority on Faney. I wouldn't know of a mare that crept up and bit me.
You're far too modest, I'm sure. If, as I say, you do happen to find it by any remote chance, I'd be grateful if you'd get in touch with me at the yard.
Oh, sure. Depend on that, Inspector.
Thank you, Mr. Lyme. Good day.
Goodbye. Thank you, James. Hey, taxi! Taxi! I had to get that picture, and I had to get it fast. And once I got it, I'd have to get rid of it even quicker still. Well, I found Mrs. Huggett after some trouble, and I learned from her that she'd given them to her married daughter who lived at 216 Colchester Street, Pimlico. Well, I was hot on the scent now. If I'd been a bloodhound, I'd have barked or bayed or whatever it is they do. Anyway, I found 216 Colchester Street with no very great trouble, and from the way Marlene had greeted me and showed me in, I guess Mama had already been on the phone to some purpose. Well, the first thing I spotted when I walked into the parlor was the vernier. Yes, there it was in all its glory, hanging over the mantelpiece. It was all I could do to stop from shouting for joy. But if I imagined Marlena was going to be an easy nut to crack, I had another guest coming. It was obvious those telephone wires had been running red hot.
Marlena told you Mother hasn't wasted your time standing here, you know. I have an earth I want to sell.
But surely, Mrs. Smith is...
Well, after all, there's William to consider.
William?
My husband. Well, I wouldn't like to do anything without consulting him. Well, I mean to say the picture's as much his as mine.
£15,
hmm? Oh, I couldn't possibly dream of letting it go for that. William would be furious. I'm not sure.
20. Okay, 25. Come on, Mrs. Smith. £25. That's a lot of money for a picture like that. Look at yourself. It's as old as the hills. The way the paint's cracking and how the color's faded. It probably won't be fit for anything but a scrap heap in another couple of years.
You seem keen enough to get old, isn't it?
Well, I explained that to your mother. It has a sentimental value for me, Mrs.
Well, so that's right.
How come?
Well, you forget what's sitting to me. After all, a present is a present. It's not the sort of thing one should sell. Well, besides, it looks real nice up there over the mantel. Yeah. I'd be glad to see it go.
£30. £50 for that old daub, ridiculous.
Well, take it and leave it.
You drive a hard bargain, Mrs. Smithers, but okay. Here's your 50.
Oh, thanks very much, I'm sure.
Mine. It was mine at last. I could hardly believe my good fortune. With a veneer tucked under my arm, I hurried back to the Ritz. All I had to do now was contact Joseph J., get rid of the picture, and collect my dollars. 150,000 of them, and every cent for Harry Lyme. I phoned Hoffman's Hotel, and to my delight and relief, I heard his voice at the other end.
Joseph J. Hoffman speaking. Who is this?
It's me, J.J., Harry Lyme.
Well, say, how are you? It's swell to hear your voice.
Ah, oh, you don't know how swell it is to hear yours.
How's that little business we discussed coming along?
Well, that's why I'm calling you, to tell you I've got the goods.
No kidding.
No kidding, right here.
Fine. Bring it round to my hotel.
No?
Sure, right now.
Do you have the money, J.J.?
Yes, sir, $150,000. Boy, I can hardly wait to get my peepers on that picture. You won't be long, will you?
Expect me in 5 minutes. $150,000, enough to keep me in the luxury to which I've become accustomed for, well, for a month or two anyway. It seemed too easy.
Harry Lyme returns in just a moment.
Astor, the picture under my arm, and the porter signaled a cab for me. From the corner of my eye, I caught sight of a familiar pair of feet coming towards me, Inspector James of Scotland Yard. I shot a quick glance to the other side, two more sets of feet, just as big and just as flat, also coming my way. Didn't have a chance in a million, I knew it. I did some split-second thinking.
Taxi, sir?
Yes, please.
Where to, sir?
Scotland Yard.
Right.
Did you say Scotland Yard, Mr. Ryan?
That's right. Why, hello, Inspector. Where did you spring from? Talk about coincidences. I was just on my way to see you, Inspector James.
Really?
Why? You'd never believe it, but you know that picture you were talking about today, that veneer?
Veneer, Mr. Lyme. Veneer is a thin car.
Yes, a veneer. Well, hold on to your hat, old man, but I think I found it.
You do?
Yes, I've got it right here.
And you were on your way to deliver it to me?
Yes, that's correct, Inspector James.
Splendid. A most public-spirited action, Mr. Lyme.
Thank you.
I'll take it down, save you the trouble if you like.
Certainly, here you are.
Thanks. I suppose it must be quite a relief to get rid of it.
Oh, sure, yes.
You know, of course, there'll be a reward for this from the insurance underwriters.
Hmm. A reward? Oh, I didn't know that.
Quite generous one, in fact. £500.
How does that work out in dollars, Inspector James?
About 1,400, I believe.
But
not as much as, say, 150,000, of course. Still, quite a lot of money, eh?
Yes, quite a lot of money.
And tax-free, too.
Tax-free.
No wonder you're known at the Yard as Lucky Harry Lyme.
No wonder.